Welcome to Zengers on the Air, the radio program based on Zengers News Magazine, a print publication of alternative lifestyles, media, politics, culture, and health in San Diego since 1994. Today we're presenting an interview with Nico D'Amico Barber, regional field organizer for the queer rights and marriage equality group Canvas for a Cause. Founded in the wake of the defeat for marriage equality in California when Proposition 8, which banned legal recognition of same-sex marriages, was passed by voters in November 2008, Canvas for a Cause was started to get the marriage equality message out to residents, not only in San Diego's so-called gayborhoods of Hillcrest, North Park, and University Heights, but throughout the city. It was also designed to raise money so its members could not only spread the marriage equality message, but get paid for doing so. Nico started off as a canvasser and rose through the ranks, and is now helping not only to run the Canvas for a Cause in San Diego, but to start a second chapter in Los Angeles. Of course, Nico and I had a lot more to talk about than that. By chance, the day I interviewed him, October 13th, was also the date the San Diego police announced their crackdown on the ongoing Occupy San Diego campout in the Civic Center Plaza. The police originally ordered everyone out of the plaza, then relented and allowed them to stay, but only so long as they didn't have tents. Nico so strongly supports Occupy San Diego as an individual that he's been spending time at the occupation site and originally wanted us to do the interview there, though his duties with Canvas for a Cause made him reschedule for the Canvas headquarters at, ironically, an old Mormon church just south of 10th and Robinson in Hillcrest. While we were doing the interview, we were interrupted by a young man coming to apply for a job with Canvas for a Cause, a longtime staff member who needed Nico's attention, and a phone call with the person Nico was letting go. They're certainly a busy group, not only with the Marriage Equality Canvas, but also with a subsidiary organization called Gay Groups Give Back, which raises money for non-queer causes like earthquake relief for Haiti. Nico's remarks went beyond his work with Canvas for a Cause. Stressing that he was speaking as an individual and not for the Canvas, he talked about Occupy San Diego, including what he thinks distinguishes it from the right-wing Tea Party movement, and also gave his personal opinion about the decision of the statewide queer lobbying organization Equality California not to seek an initiative to repeal Proposition 8 on the November 2012 ballot. Nico is clearly an up-and-coming leader in the equality movement and for progressive causes in general, and for that reason we're taking the unusual step of presenting this interview in audio form before it's published in the print version of Zengers News Magazine. Accordingly, reproduction of this interview in text form, either in paper or online, is strictly prohibited without the express written permission of Mark Gabrish Conlon. Non-commercial reproduction of the actual audio is allowed and indeed encouraged. To contact Canvas for a Cause, visit their headquarters at 3705 10th Avenue in Hillcrest, phone 619-630-7750, email them at info@canvas.org, contact the Canvas for a Cause page on Facebook, or visit their website at www.canvas.org. That's 619-630-7750, email info@canvasforacause.org or www.canvasforacause.org on the web.
Let's start by telling you a little about yourself and how you got into activism.
Sure. My first experience with anything LGBT was when I first came back from Italy. My parents were in the Navy, so I spent the second half of my first decade there. So I came back to the United States when I was about 10, and my parents took me to a church called the Unitarian Universalist Church of San Diego. It's probably one of the most liberal churches in the world. In the early 80s, the UUA, the Unitarian Universalist Association, put out a mandate saying that all ministers had to marry gay couples, and that was in the early 80s. So from a very young age, I was playing with little boys and little girls who had two moms or two dads. It wasn't strange to me. It wasn't weird. It was just sort of how I grew up. I knew it to be okay. But at the same time, I didn't really have a great grasp on the difficulties that the gay community faced. That didn't come about until high school, when I became a little bit less sheltered, and I got to see a bunch of kids from a lot of different lifestyles and what those different lifestyles and what those different cultures thought about the gay community. I went to a fairly progressive school, but that doesn't mean that I wasn't exposed to some homophobia. I got involved in GSA, Gay Straight Alliance, as a result. And while there, I met a very good friend of mine at the time. Her name was Noelle, and she became like a sister to me, basically, in high school. And she was very very closeted. I mean, she had a terrible time coming out. It was very difficult for her. It literally got to the point where me and a few of our other friends would basically like force her to go to Hillcrest and hang out with us, and we would just be like, there's a girl right over there. I want you to tell me three things you notice about her. She'd be like, her shoes, and I'm like, come on, be honest with yourself, like, really, you know. But she would, but she became very open, and she went through that, and because of that, I actually went to a lot of events with her. I joined the GSA. I did school-wide awareness events, such as Day of Silence. People took bets on whether or not I could do it all, keep my mouth shut all day. And then I actually got into the Decline to Sign campaign. That was my first experience with actual politics. I'm sure you know, but for those who don't, the Decline to Sign campaign is the precursor to the Prop 8 campaign. When they were qualifying petitions, a lot of people put a lot of effort into making sure that the Prop 8 wouldn't even go through to the ballot. Obviously, that failed. It did go through to the ballot. But that was my first foray into activism. However, after high school, I drifted away from activism. I didn't have as much time to do stuff like that. I had to worry about getting a job and paying the bills. And I was managing a small coffee shop, and I went to, again, a church event, and I met a girl there, and we were talking, and I was like, almost practically between jobs right now. I kind of hate my job. It sort of sucks. and I'm like, I manage a small coffee shop. What do you do? And she looked at me and she's like, well, I fight for gay rights. And I'm like, oh, so you volunteer a lot? And she's like, no. I get paid to fight for gay rights. And I'm like, hold the phone. You what? You can get paid for that? That's a thing? So I was working at Canvas for a Cause, and less than a week later, the very first thing I did was sign me up. As I came to work here, I went out, I did voter outreach, I signed up members, I recruited volunteers, and more and more, I just needed more. I literally would go up to people here at the office and say, listen, I need more. I need to do some more stuff. And they started giving me more stuff. And within a couple months, I got a promotion. And a couple months after that, I got another promotion. And a couple months after that, I got another promotion. And I'm pretty dedicated to working here now. I spent some time in Los Angeles opening up our second office, our LA office. I spent about 3 months up there making sure that office was in the black, off the ground, ready to go. And then I came back to San Diego, sort of helped San Diego out a bit. And now I'm sort of moving into a kind of regional position to some degree. I'm sort of overseeing the San Diego and the Los Angeles offices.
Okay, can you tell me a little bit about Canvas for a Cause, how it started and how it works?
Well, it's a very long story. Canvas for a Cause started as a group of six pissed off activists in the aftermath of Proposition 8. The way the community was at the time, it was sort of stuck in this voting. Nobody was actually doing anything. They were all just strategizing. And a lot of people, the six pissed off activists included, pretty much just said, listen, we would literally have more of an effect on the gay rights movement if we just went up the doors with anything and just talk to people. I mean, we could literally just go up and go knock knock gay and run away, and that would have more of an effect than doing nothing, because at least people would be talking about it. So they had this idea about going out and fundraising and then using those fundraising dollars to run volunteer events where they would get their volunteers and their activists and they would go into non-supportive neighborhoods and persuade voters to come back to the side of equality. And it was an amazing idea, but it wasn't something that they really had any way to germinate into an actual campaign. It looked like they weren't sure if it was going somewhere or not until they had what they like to call sort of the bat symbol in the sky moment, that moment where they're like, man, we need to go help, that's what we're talking about. And what that was for us was something called Question One. Question One was the same exact thing as Proposition 8, except it happened in Maine. In 2009, Maine qualified gay marriage bill through their House and Senate, and it got ratified into law by the governor. And it was set, actually, to fully legalize on January 1st, 2010. However, the National Organization for Marriage showed up and qualified a special election for October of 2009. So the No on Question One campaign, because Question One was constitutional amendment that would ban gay marriage preemptively. The No on Question One campaign put out a national call for help to all these different activists across the country. And the ones here in San Diego, our sort of founding members, went. They went. They didn't get paid for it. They literally were volunteers for 3 weeks. The only thing that the campaign provided for them was supporter housing. And what ended up happening is they went. Thanks to their volunteer experience and thanks to the organizing experience that they had, they ended up with, hey guys, could you quiet down a little bit? Okay, thank you.
Yeah, we're doing an interview up here.
they basically helped to run volunteer events for the entire state. They helped recruit volunteers for the entire state of Maine. And on their way back, they were like, God, this is... I can't believe this. I mean, we're going back to nothing. I mean, we just spent this amazing time in Maine doing this organizing work, and we have this strong feeling about what should happen in California. I mean, we should do this. We should keep doing this. And literally on the plane flight back from Maine to San Diego is where they went on the IRS website and registered Canvas for a Cause as a nonprofit. So that's where Canvas for a Cause was born, 5,000 miles above Kansas City, Missouri. but when they got back to San Diego, they hit the ground running. As our executive director, Trace Watson, likes to say, we started with $20 on a Discovery card, two full-time volunteers, and donated moldy space. The way we operated at first is we would go out, we would fundraise and recruit volunteers, and then we would put those fundraising dollars and those volunteers towards projects with coalition partners, where we would go out into non-supportive neighborhoods and persuade voters. Kept growing as an organization. We eventually moved out of the donated moldy space. We moved into a nice little executive suite downtown. It was kind of cool, except that it was maybe like this big. It was a tiny, tiny little space. This space up here is what I mean. We kept growing as an organization, and eventually. We got to a point where we really needed sort of that another make or break moment, and what that was for us was the disaster in Haiti. The disaster in Haiti, when it came through, when you see these images of thousands dead, thousands more displaced, there was this incredible feeling of, man, we need to do something. And what that was for us was something called Gay Groups We Give Back. We became coalition partners with other groups in the community, and in the name of the gay community, we fundraised money to send to Haiti to get survival packs in the hands of families that could survive for months while they waited for more permanent help. We were able to help 12 families that day. And once more, we did it in the name of the gay community, which was something that was really needed. The gay community at the time was seen as somewhat secular. You know, we want people to help us with our issues, but we don't necessarily want to help everyone else with theirs, that kind of thing. So that was something that we were endeavoring to do. And it was an amazing feeling. It was an awesome feeling. We did a lot of work, but what it showed us was that we didn't need to throw our volunteers at these other organizations. We could run our own volunteer events because we organized that entire event ourselves. And that's really where the field program was born here at Canvas for a Cause. That's where we started hiring field directors. That's where we started doing field work. And from that point on, I mean, the rest is history. We just kept growing and growing and growing and growing and adding more and more and more to our field programs, taking on more and more and more events. And really, we're at the point now where not only do we work on our own campaigns, but people will literally come to our field committee meetings and say, listen, I mean, I have this great idea. Can you guys help? A great example is we did a prisoners' rights rally a few weeks ago, and it was literally brought to us by a woman whose husband was in prison, her husband was on the hunger strike, and she literally said, I've never done this before. I mean, I've never organized a rally before. And she's like, I feel like I would be lucky to get 200 signatures at this rally. We helped her out, and we got something like 370. And then now she personally thanked us for teaching her all of those methods that she needed in order to organize that rally, in order to organize around her specific issue. So even though we never really took the time out to put a lot of time into ourselves, we were able to train other people in the community to work on their issues as well. And that's one of the things that is so important to us.
How is Canvas for a Cause funded?
Canvas for a Cause is a completely grassroots organization. So what that means is that we're funded by thousands and thousands of thousands of donors every single year who believe in what we do. The largest donation that we've ever had, out in the field, is $508. and yet, despite that, we managed to operate with 50 activists in two cities here in California. Operating on no more than $508 contributions at a time. And the reason we're able to do that is because when we go out there, people are constantly funding us. Because we operated grassroots, it helps keeps us honest. We're not working for one or two donors who can dictate what we do or don't do. We're working for ourselves. We know what we want to do. And if people disagree with us, if people don't agree with the work we're doing, then they won't give us donations anymore. So that's one of the things that's so special about working in the grassroots field, is that it's completely self-sustainable, but also it keeps movements honest. It ensures that the movements are going to live up to their promises, or their funding is just going to fall out from underneath them.
Any comment about the decision by Equality California not to seek the repeal of Proposition 8 on the ballot in 2012?
I feel like I'm not quite qualified to speak about other organizations. I'm very involved in the inner workings of Canvas for a Cause, but we have people whose entire job it is to study the movement, to do coalition work with other groups. I can set up an interview with you, with someone who can actually maybe answer that question a lot more accurately.
Well, not speaking for Canvas for a Cause, speaking personally, do you think the community should be doing a campaign right now or not?
On a personal level, I mean, absolutely, and I mean, I imagine that Canvas for a Cause would believe the same thing, though maybe that's off the record. But the fact of the matter is that this issue is something that everyone needs to keep in mind. I mean, people, you know, one of the sad things about the campaign is that during the original Proposition 8 campaign, we had something like 400 volunteers statewide on the campaign. And yet, a few weeks after Proposition 8 passed, we had hundreds of thousands of people up and down the state marching the streets in protest. So they had the time to take away from their daily lives to go protest, but they didn't have the time to volunteer in the first place. And sort of that's what Canvas for a Cause is. I mean, we're out there activating voters. I mean, we like to say that Canvas for a Cause is the antidote to apathy. If someone feels strongly about this issue, then they shouldn't just sit by their side. They should actually go out and figure out what it is that they can do to improve the movement. Of course, I believe that we should be fighting for Proposition 8 or fighting to repeal Proposition 8 next year. But if we don't. If every single person in the state isn't behind that, if every single person sitting at home reading this article, you know, isn't going forward, moving forward on this issue and doing everything that they can, then we might not be able to get equal rights. You know, we need everyone on board. This isn't something that, you know, five people can win. This is something that takes an army of activists and advocates all working on human rights issues.
That's how the people on the other side got Proposition 8 in the first place.
Exactly.
They had the dedication. They were able to mobilize the forces to get it on the ballot and push it through and, change a 15-point deficit in the polls to a 5% victory on Election Day.
Exactly.
So what you're saying is we need to be at least as organized as they are.
At least, if not more. and more so, I mean, there's... Canvas for a Cause has tons of volunteer events all the time. We have many opportunities to get involved. But more so than just Canvas for a Cause, the progressive movement has so much more potential than people give it credit for. People assume that things are going to happen because they vote a certain way. But the fact of the matter is that when you're an organizer, you're not just producing your own vote, you're producing thousands of votes as you go out and talk to people. So, what I would ask your readers to do is ask themselves, do I want to contribute one vote to the election, or do I want to contribute 1,000? Because you can contribute 1,000 easily. Even if it's not with Canvas for a Cause, you can find ways to organize, and you can go out, and even if you just go door to door in your own neighborhood and knock on random strangers' door and say, hey, do you support gay marriage? Really? Why not? Tell me about it. At least you're doing something.
Yeah, you said that people think that they can, people, especially people on the progressive side, think they can achieve social change by electing the right people. And one source of frustration to me has been that the right seems to understand the limits of electoral activism a lot better than the left does.
Mm-hmm.
And the right seems to understand that your electoral activism, and your direct action out in the street need to work together. And the left doesn't have a clue about that. The leftists seem to think that that's an either or.
One of the things that makes me sad is that every day, that I would go out in the field, I would hear at least one person say, don't worry, it'll happen. That sentence is the reason why we don't have gay rights in the United States. Don't worry, it'll happen. Because no. It will not happen. It will not happen. If you're saying that if you're saying that it'll happen, that means that you're not doing what you need to be doing to ensure that it will. If someone cares about this issue, then they should get out and do something about it. And the same with every other issue as well. Being an active member of a democracy is more than just voting. It's about organizing and speaking about your beliefs.
We're speaking, just for the record, since I actually probably won't run this for another month, but for the record, we're speaking while the Occupy Wall Street protests are just about a month old. The Occupy San Diego protest is about a week old. And that's been, one of my fears about that is that, instead of realizing that there has to be an electoral component as well as doing those kinds of actions, that we're going to not be able to translate a lot of that good energy into positive change.
I mean, I would disagree in that, and the reason I would disagree is because when someone becomes activated on any issue, then they start to look at the world in a completely different way. When I first came to Canvas for a Cause, I did a little bit of work on Decline to Sign, but that was nothing in comparison to the work I'm doing today. And when I first came to Canvas for a Cause, sure, I had political beliefs, and I even talked to people when the moment was right about those political beliefs. But what doing activism work teaches you isn't that it's about believing in politics and then doing what you need to get a certain vote through or to get a certain election to happen or to pass a certain bill or to get a certain person in office. It's about seeing the world in terms of not how it is or how it should be, but how you can improve it and how you can make it better. And sometimes it's a compromise, and sometimes it's a complete and total victory. But as long as you're looking at the world in those in that light, and as long as you're thinking about everything in terms of how it can change, then you can make positive growth. And I think what Occupy San Diego does is, even if it doesn't bring that electoral component into it, it is awakening so many people. Those people downtown that are walking through that area and seeing everything that's going on there and asking and figuring out what's going on, when that person has that light bulb moment where the light bulb finally goes off in their head, even if they're not doing that electoral work right there, they're finally activated, and now they're going to start seeing that sort of thing everywhere. Everything in from elections to the food you eat to the clothes you wear. I mean, we should always be thinking about what social impacts we're having. I mean, a great example is I refuse to buy new clothes because I know that most of them are made by, you know, sweatshops in foreign countries. That in its own way is a form of activism, and looking at your entire life that way, you know, is how you can and truly contribute to society. I know I kind of trailed off there a little bit, so I hope that sort of answered the question.
Yeah, because, you know, one possible outcome I can see from the Occupy movements is that, you know, by stressing how much both the major parties are enthralled to the corporate agenda, they might actually make it easier for the Republicans to sweep the 2012 elections. That, you know, the kinds of people who 3 years ago were volunteering for Obama are turning up these things and saying, well, you know, he wasn't the Messiah, therefore we shouldn't bother to vote. And, you know, everyone from our side who doesn't bother to vote is a vote for the Republicans and the Tea Party to take complete control of the country and, mm-hmm. you know, move it in the direction they want, which is quite different from what we want.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this is another one of those questions where I can maybe give you some personal opinion, somebody from our field department might be a little bit more better qualified to answer this question.
Okay, give me your personal opinion.
Okay. So my personal opinion, I don't, how should I put this? I think that right now, the progressive movement is going through somewhat of a cocoon phase and a rebirth. Up until now, so much of the movement has been focused around, you know, individual peoples or individual slogans, but it's always been about some sort of centralized movement. And I think that right now, people are finally waking up. People are finally realizing that it's not about becoming part of something, it's about doing things for yourself. And yes, that includes voting, and that includes voting for the right person, but it's not about being swept up under something. It's about...
I think we were talking about, you know, my frustration. Why can't the left be more like the Tea Party?
Right. Like I said, you know, I don't think that's the answer, because becoming like the Tea Party means being swept up in a movement. And people in the Tea Party, again, my personal opinion, don't necessarily even understand what they're fighting for. They're fighting because they're angry and because they're involved in this movement. However, they're not thinking for themselves. And I don't think that the answer for the progressive movement is to become more like the Tea Party. It's to become the complete opposite of the Tea Party. It's to individualize and educate every single person and to activate every single person and become their own organizer. That's how I feel. So what was your name?
Yeah, I think we're still talking about...
I remember now. Yeah, I think I finished my thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I remember finishing my thought. Sorry about that.
And I was getting ready to ask a follow-up question, which was that, you know, it was kind of interesting statement because, you know, a lot of the criticism of Occupy San Diego in the mainstream media has been that, you know, at least when you go to the Tea Party rally, you know what this group stands for, and when you go to one of the Occupy events,
You know, there is an amazing, amazing viral video going around right now. I forget the guy's name, but it's some ex-candidate for the Democratic Party. And he was on the Bill Maher show, and he has like a minute and 30 seconds. And in 1 minute and 30 seconds, he manages to sum up the movement better than I ever could. I understand the concept, but it is a somewhat difficult concept to understand, and I could see why many people misunderstand what we're trying to accomplish. What it is it's about educating the public and bringing people outside of their daily lives. If you go down there, there's not power, there's not electricity, there's no showers. I mean, we're lucky there's a restroom. And the reason that is because every aspect of modern society that distracts us from the issues that affect human rights and human suffering here in the United States is removed, and all that's left is a pure sense of community, understanding, progressive forward vision, and a need for activism and positive movement. You're not bogged down by everything that usually bogs us down in daily life. So many times I've met people out in the field that don't want to talk to me until I kind of say, no, you're going to have to talk to me today. And by the end of that conversation, they want to volunteer with us 10 days a week. And the reason why that happens is because before I managed to have a conversation with them, they were thinking about you know, their daughter's soccer game and their son's, you know, recital, and they're thinking about the groceries and what they need to do for work and what the boss said last time and, you know, what their mother-in-law is coming, you know, to dinner that night and all these things about their daily life, until somebody has a conversation with them and pulls them away from that and says, no, stop. Forget all that for a second. These other things are happening. There's an amazing quote that I'm going to completely butcher right now, but it's from the Holocaust, and I forget who said it, but it basically says, you know, they came for the Lutherans, but I wasn't a Lutheran, so I did not raise my hand. They came for the Calvinists.
And the trade unionists and the Jews.
The trade unionists, yeah, but I was not a trade
unionist. The communists, the trade unionists, and the Jews.
And then they came for the Jews, and then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak up for me.
Pastor Martin Niemöller,
yes,
who was a Lutheran minister in Germany in 1933.
That's sort of
actually after the war, reflecting on the fact that, you know, even though he had actually done some things, he had, you know, felt he had not done enough.
Yeah, I mean. I can understand now how you would feel that way. I think that anybody who's living through the Holocaust would feel that they haven't done enough.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Because I guess what's going through my head is that the 2012 election is going to be a major change for this country, and it's not going to be the change we want.
It's
going to be, you know, the total takeover of the Republicans and the Tea Party, and they will move this country as much as Germany was moved in 1933.
Well, you know, again, we don't know that to be true, and I would actually argue that right now, I mean, the Occupy movement, even, it's making a lot of people wake up. Right now, a lot of people in the United States are waking up in a way that they never have before, and if they aren't now, you know, they will soon, because, you know, the right is going crazy right now, and they are, you know, gathering a lot of support, but they're gathering support from people that are scared. They're gathering support, you know, using fear. They're not gathering support using education and understanding, and in the end, education and understanding, you know, is always going to win. It just sometimes takes time. Now, I personally think that the election is not going to be as bad as you think it is. I think that people will surprise you. But even if it is, it will always get better, and I take pride in that, and it will always also get better because there will always be people like me, and there will always be groups like Cameras for a Cause that will not stop and will continue to fight no matter what the odds are against them. I mean, you know, at the beginning of Canvas for a Cause, I mean, you know, I say that we were, you know, two full-time volunteers and donated Moldy Space with $20 on a Discovery card. I mean that in complete honesty. I mean, the beginning of Canvas for a Cause was by no means impressive, but regardless, we continued to grow and we continued to fight and we continued to strive until we became what we are today. And if every single person took as much drive and as much initiative that Canvas for a Cause as an organization has, then we would have every human right and every human dignity that people have been calling out for in the United States. And it's just that people sit by and do nothing, and that's why we don't have what we have now.
Yeah, no, I've, I put out a newspaper and, cover a lot of events and, do alternative media, do publicity, get things on the web, and I ask myself sometimes, Mark, are you really doing enough?
Mm-hmm.
Are you really doing everything you could be?
I mean, I think the answer is that I think the answer to that question is when you are so exhausted and tired from doing the work that you feel you need to do to help others, that you feel like you just can't physically do it anymore, that's when it's time to take a break. And that's when it's time to maybe spend some time on yourself. And I can understand people that were in activism and spend a lot of time in activism and leave it and go on to do their own things, because there comes a time in your life when you know, you need to take some time for personal care. But most people have done nothing that's not true. Let me take that back. Most people cannot honestly say that they've been activists. They can say that they've been contributing members of society, and that in itself is respectable. But every single person has it in them to be an activist and an advocate, both for themselves and for the suppressed minority groups that do not have the means to speak for themselves. And when every single person can honestly say, I have been an activist and I have done good work, you know, the day that every single person is able to say that is the day where the United States will finally be where it should be. And even then, there will be more work to do.
You have been listening to Zengers on the Air, the radio edition of Zengers News Magazine, featuring an interview with Nico D'Amico Barber, Regional Field Director of Canvas for a Cause, the organization by which members can not only agitate for marriage equality and other queer rights causes, but get paid for it. This interview is being aired in advance of its scheduled publication in the December 2011 edition of Zengers News Magazine. Because of the timeliness of Nico's comments on the ongoing Occupy San Diego movement and other issues. Accordingly, reproduction of this interview in text form, either on paper or online, is strictly prohibited without the express written permission of Mark Gabrysch-Conlin. Non-commercial reproduction of the actual audio is allowed and, indeed, encouraged. To contact Canvas for a Cause, visit their headquarters at 3705 10th Avenue in Hillcrest, phone 619-630-7750. Email them at info@canvas, that's CANVASS, for a cause.org. Contact the Canvas for a Cause page on Facebook, or visit their website at www.canvas, CANVASS, for a cause.org. That's 619-630-7750. Email info@canvasforacause.org. or www.canvasforacause.org on the web. Zengers on the Air is a production of Zengers News Magazine, offering information and commentary on alternative lifestyles, media, politics, culture, and health since 1994. Subscriptions to Zengers News Magazine are $25 per year and are available through our mailing address, P.O. Box 50134, San Diego, CA 92165. Or visit our website at http://zengersmag.blogspot.com. That's P.O. Box 50134, San Diego, CA 92165, or on the web at http://zengersmag.blogspot.com. Thank you for listening.